welcome to Honey and the Hex. I'm Tatum.
And I'm Tansy.
And we're a sibling duo exploring the origins, traditions and intersections of folklore and where they lie today.
Each episode will bring you our learnings of myths, magic and mystery by shining a light on the past and how it's not always as distant as it seems. The seasons roll through our literature, budding, blossoming, fruiting and dying again. Lazy summer days and golden harvests, misty autumn walks and frozen fields in winter, and of course, the hopeful romance of spring. So, spring. It's a time of rebirth, of life surging back again, despite the freezing cold of winter. I am honestly just defrosting.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Living in the city, it can be harder to see the signs of spring. But like, you know, even when you see the little small signs, little signals like a daffodil, I just get really excited, the thought that the light's coming back. And today, the sun is shining. I'm happy.
I know. I literally text all of my friends. Oh my God, it's bright outside. It's still light at 4 p.m.
Yeah, exactly. It just makes such a difference to my mood. Even though I am such a gothic, like dark kind of aesthetic person, I get so excited by the sun, and I am a July baby.
Yeah.
I'm a winter bitch, but summer's in my blood.
I'm like the opposite. I'm a summer bitch, but winter's in my blood because my blood is so cold. That was a boy genius moment, by the way, for anyone who listens who isn't gay, which, do we have any non-gay listeners?
Do any straight listeners?
We love you if you're straight. Everyone's welcome here.
Absolutely. Yeah, we did see Boy Genius in the summer and it was just the best. I think it was one of the best days of my life.
Yeah, true.
Honestly. So sorry about the musical podcast, but yeah, that's where that came from. So we're going to speak about Ostara today. Ostara is the time of balance. It is equal parts light and dark and a time of hope. So if you made it through the winter, congratulations.
Ostara, also known as the spring equinox, is a pagan festival that celebrates the arrival of spring and the balance of day and night. It is one of the eight Sabbats observed in modern pagan and Wiccan traditions, marking the midpoint between the winter solstice and the summer solstice. The Wheel of the Year is observed by many pagans and witches, but you don't have to be either of those. A lot of people actually still celebrate and follow these Sabbats because it can be a more intuitive way to mark the year than our Gregorian calendar that's kind of like pushed onto us.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes more sense because it goes with the seasons.
It goes with the sea, yeah, and the moon and everything. So yes, yeah, it does make more sense.
Ostara is typically observed around March 20th to the 23rd in the Northern Hemisphere and around September 20th in the Southern Hemisphere. The festival is named after the Germanic goddess Eöste. What do you reckon?
Eöste.
Eöste? We think Eöste?
I've heard it say so many different ways. Eöste? Eostra,
okay.
Eostra, and even just the name Ostara, goddess of spring. So I think we should go with Eostra.
So yes, the goddess Eostra, or Ostara, who represents fertility, renewal, and the dawn. Some symbols associated with Ostara include eggs, a representation of fertility and new life, as well as hares or rabbits, which are symbols of abundance and fertility in various cultures. Imbolc, which we celebrated in February, is the preparation for spring, and Ostara is the celebration of spring. It's finally arrived. So when Imbolc comes, it's not full-on spring. It's this kind of shaking off the cobwebs a bit, preparing yourself for spring, and it's very much a slow transition out of winter and acknowledging that spring is on the horizon. And then when Ostara comes, you feel really more energized because we are actually celebrating the equinox.
The transition from the celebration of Ostara to Easter is a very complex historical and cultural process that occurred over many centuries. As we've spoken about many times before, the Christian seas of pagan festivals. When Christianity spread throughout Europe, missionaries often incorporated existing cultural practices and festivals into Christian celebrations to make the new faith more accessible and appealing to local populations. And in the case of Ostara, the celebration became intertwined with the Christian celebration of the resurrection of Jesus Christ, commemorated during Easter. So who was the goddess Eöste? Well, this is really interesting. So compared to so many other ancient deities that we know so much about, she's not very well documented, which I kind of love because it gives her more mystery. There's more mystery surrounding her. Mm. And in my opinion, more room for personal interpretation. Because if you don't know, if you don't have access to everything about someone, then they are more mysterious, hey? But there is a historical mention of Aosta, and that comes from St. Bede, who was an English monk, author and scholar. And this is in his 8th century text, The Reckoning of Time. Bede recounts that pagan Anglo-Saxons once celebrated feasts in honour of Aosta. But however, Bede does note that this tradition had waned by the time of his era, giving way to the Christian Easter, dedicated to commemorating the resurrection of Jesus. There is also, in 1835, recent times, Jacob Grimm of the Brothers Grimm, and he penned Deutsche Mythologie, and that's an exploration of Germanic and Norse mythology. And in his work, Grimm extensively delved into the subject and proposed a link between Anglo-Saxon Aosta and the broader Germanic religious context. And this is what Jacob Grimm says of Aosta. Aosta seems, therefore, to have been the divinity of the radiant dawn of upspringing light, a spectacle that brings joy and blessing, and whose meaning could be easily adapted by the resurrection day of the Christian's God. He goes on to say, bonfires were lit at Easter and water drawn on Easter morning, like at Christmas, it's holy and healing. Here also heathen notions seems to have grafted themselves on Christian festivals. Maidens clothed in white, who at Easter, at the season of returning spring, show themselves in clefts of the rock and on mountains, are suggestive of the ancient goddess.
So it is thought, of course, considering the similarities that Easter derived from her name. And as we see Aosta as the goddess of the dawn and spring and fertility, we see her associated with the hares. This is a tale that Aosta can shapeshift into a hare, and a lot of the imagery surrounding her contains rabbits and hares.
And it said that she actually transformed a bird into a hare, and then the hare responded by laying beautiful coloured eggs for her festival, which we do see around Easter time, which is where we get the Easter bunny. Mm-hmm. Not my deity. honestly, I do love, you know, I always talk about Easter chocolate and Valentine's Day chocolate. So I went really far on that.
Yeah, you really keep hammering home all of the cuddly toys, the chocolates for all of the holidays. Yeah. You seem quite obsessed.
I think it's because I don't eat chocolate anymore. Rarely. So maybe
I eat chocolate every day.
I know.
But anyway.
I used to. I think, yeah, I don't know why I'm so mad at Easter and Valentine's Day chocolate. Maybe it's because I just... No one gives me any. But I do want to get the sausage dog chocolate from M&S anyway. Bunny talk. Adolf Holtzmann, who also penned a book called Deutsche Mythologie, apparently there's room for everyone, states the Easter hare is inexplicable to me, but probably the hare was the sacred animal of Astara, just as there is a hare on the statue of Abnoba. I'm no hare pro. Well, I am with the Olaplex.
What's Olaplex?
It's a Olaplex for your hair. For your actual hair, not your rabbit. It's like a...
Oh, a serum.
It's a pre-shampoo.
This is the difference of our personalities.
It basically mends the fibres and the things in your hair, but you put it on before you wash your hair and then...
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's all sorts.
Okay.
But we're from Leicester, okay? So we haven't always been really proud of this. I don't know why. We left as soon as we could. I left when I literally just turned 16.
Yeah.
But Leicester legitimately has close ties to the hare and the goddess Aosta. There even used to be ritual hare hunts in Leicester. So this is quite wild because Leicester, I mean, people kind of know about it because of the football or the rugby, or is that all we have? Black Anise. When I've been doing this research, Leicester's come up quite a few times. And as like reading these American journals and, you know, all these kind of different research that has Leicester in it. It was just
love
like,
it. Big up Leicester.
Exactly.
LC.
And even when we were in Austin in Texas and we went into the museum and there was, it might have just been Daniel Lambert, but he was like died in Leicester or something.
Yeah.
But anyway, we Leicester saw Leicester.
Leicester does have some good lore.
Yeah.
But it's cool that it's coming up a lot, the connection between.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just wild. Our little city that we've got shares in. I feel like I'm being like really wholesome with my comedy today.
Yeah, you are.
Okay, so referring to Easter traditions in Leicestershire, during the late 19th century, scholar Charles Isaac Elton highlighted folk customs were the prophets of the land, called hare crop lees, and they were used to furnish a meal thrown on the ground at the hare pie bank. And Elton connected these customs directly to the worship of Yoster.
So this is the hare pie scramble.
Exactly. It's so iconic. So we actually spoke about this on our second ever episode, but I didn't make the connection to Ostara, but now I'm a seasoned folklorist.
I do not claim that.
I'm joking, guys. But you love the hare pie scramble, Tates.
Yeah, I do.
Like the idea of it.
Yeah. So this is a long-standing tradition in Leicester, dating back over 1,000 years. The hare pie scramble and bottle kicking, they're held annually in Hallaton on Easter Monday. This event interrupted only twice in its history, once in 2001 due to foot and mouth disease, and in 2020 because of COVID. It involves the baking of a giant hare pie with a secret recipe. The pie is then blessed by the vicar and tossed into the crowd for a very lively scramble.
Scrambling around. Give me a bit of hair pie.
Sounds quite dangerous, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think
it is. But quite fun as well.
Yeah.
But my disabled ass will be standing on the sidelines.
I'll be like head in pie.
Yeah, perfect. During the festivities, two villages, Hallaton and Medbourne, engage in a spirited competition over three small beer barrels. The objective is to transport the kegs to their respective village boundaries, with the first team achieving this feat declared the winner. Following the competition, the communities come together to share the beer. Of course, in 1790, the church attempted to cancel the event due to its perceived pagan origins. However, the next day, graffiti appeared on the vicarage. It was declaring on the wall, "No pie, no parson," indicating the people were devoted to this tradition.
No pie, no parson. I think about that quite a lot. Yeah. Oh, can we do merch? Actually, that would be so good.
That's really good.
Okay, we have to do no pie, no parson, because I can already see it. I can see the pie and I can see the hairs and I can see the text.
Yeah. I'm well into it.
Tim's in their heresy. So.
Yeah, I'm wearing my heresy today. My, what's this one say? Right to Rome? My right to Rome. If you don't know what right to Rome is, you should check out the campaign.
We couldn't be more folk today.
Yeah, I'm really embarrassed. I didn't realise I have this t-shirt on, and then I have a folklore hoodie on that I've just taken off.
I have on, what's that heart thing called?
Oh yeah, the Sacred Heart?
Yeah.
Very, we're looking folklore vibes today.
Yeah. We still need to go to this Hallaton Hair Pie Scramble. So I think that one Easter, Mum always thinks that we're going to go back home for Easter. Like every Christmas, she's like, well, I'll see you at Easter.
Bless her.
I know. Oh, I'm like, no, I'll see you next Christmas.
Yeah, literally.
Do you know what? It's really nice. I love that the hare pie scramble is related to the goddess Yoster and Ostara. It just makes me feel a little warm and happy connection to our hometown.
Yeah, and we've got that kind of lighthearted stuff. And then we have Black Anise.
Exactly.
From Leicestershire as well. It's like the spooky side. We've got some good things in Leicester. I love it.
I bet Black Anise was at the hare pie scramble.
Oh, for sure, with her long arms.
Yeah.
She could get right through the crowd and grab that pie.
100%. She'd be the first one.
Imagine a mosh pit with Black Anise.
Or a Lupercalia festival with Black Anise.
Let's just get Black Anise in all the parties, all the celebrations.
I know that we did that as our second ever episode, but since then, she's come up so much. Mm. I would love to revisit her. I think she deserves a dedicated documentary series. And I think the only two people that could possibly make it is us two, because we are from Leicester. And like, I just think that,
I'm really enjoying that confidence. We are the only two people.
Hello,
right, watch this space.
Ostara. I'm trying to set new goals and, you know, experiences and manifest.
Yes. All right.
Thank you so much. The earliest documentation of the Easter hare, Osterhase, dates back to 1678 in southwest Germany, as recorded by the professor of medicine, George Frank von Frankenau. That is such an iconic name. However, its recognition in other regions of Germany did not occur until the 18th century. According to scholar Richard Sermon, the presence of hares in gardens during spring might have conveniently explained the origin of coloured eggs hidden for children. An alternative European belief suggested that hares laid eggs, drawing from the resemblance between a hare's scratch or form and a lapwing's nest, both found in grassland and both first observed in spring. So we've got Eosta potentially turning a bird into a rabbit and laying these beautiful coloured eggs, and then we have other explanations of that too. Now, if you think of Easter, you're thinking of little, what are they called? Mini eggs. You know, the little coloured mini eggs and stuff.
Mini eggs are superior.
They're so good. Oh my God, they've also got a bar of mini eggs chocolate, like a Cadbury's, but it's got mini eggs inside it.
Sounds great.
And all the sensory experiences you get when you crunch it.
Oh. Mini egg brownies as well. Have you had any of those?
Oh my gosh, yes, they're so good. And the mini egg cupcakes, and when you bite them, it's got the yellow kind of like cream thing inside.
Oh, I don't like those ones.
Oh, I do. Well, I'll eat them all then.
Yeah, nice.
I'm going to bring them over on purpose.
Yeah. Got a gift. Oh no, all for me.
So obviously this kind of imagery you see around Easter, the eggs, the bunnies, because in the 19th century, there was widespread use of the Easter cards, toys and books, which contributed to the Easter hare and rabbit's popularity across Europe. And German immigrants then exported this custom to Britain and America, where it underwent further evolution into the Easter bunny.
And hares have close ties to witchcraft. Christians in the medieval period believed the hare to be related to witchcraft and misfortune. They believed witches could transform into hares and harm livestock by draining their milk.
So that's like a hare vampire with milk. I love it. Mm-hmm. The hare was a sign of impending doom. Also, because they're actually very sexually active, you know, you hear the saying like, oh, they're at it like bunnies, or they were seen.
Isn't it at it like rabbits?
At it like rabbits.
Yeah.
Not at it like bunnies. What am I on about?
I mean, technically, yeah, but you know, yeah.
At it like Osterhases. So at it like rabbits, they were seen to be symbols of lust. Like, I don't know whether, like, is that what the Christians came up with, like, a Jessica Rabbit? Like, a sexy kind of, like, and rampant rabbits. And...
Yeah. It's so strange because for me, it's like, I just can't see that. But then at the same time, I guess if rabbits are sexually active, that's why. But when you look at them, you're like, oh, this is so cute. You know, if you think of a more misfortune, if you imagine something of misfortune, I guess I would picture something like a snake or, mm-hmm. But even then, everything's double-sided, right? So even with snakes, some people perceive that as a bad omen, and then other people can be like, oh, it's a symbol of transitioning because it's shedding the skin. So I guess it depends in the context of where these things turn up.
That's true.
So for a bunny, obviously it can be about, well, I guess it's just about fertility, which does connect. So
because they breed so quickly.
Yes.
Yeah. I know I was just talking about how I've not really been eating chocolate, but I love Easter egg chocolate. No, wait, did I not say that?
Are you trying to talk about chocolate again?
I was just thinking, I was saying I didn't like Valentine's Day or Easter egg or Easter chocolate,
oh, but
I actually
Easter
like
Easter egg chocolate's amazing.
The Easter egg, the one, the hollow one, the yes. Cadbury's one that you squeeze in and then you just like...
I actually love... You know what I always do? I wait until it's after Easter and then they put them down to like 50p and I do my classic thing, you know, I love this stands. I melt the chocolate in the microwave and then I get my raspberries or my strawberries. I'm obsessed with melting chocolate. So... Yeah, I get it. That Easter,
it's
actual
so
Easter
good.
Egg, the hollow chocolate is tasty.
Yeah, it's so good. I think I can't believe I just lied and said I didn't eat Easter and Valentine's Day chocolate when obviously I did. Actually, of Easter eggs. So, I mean, it's quite clear now where the Easter egg comes from. It's, as Ostara is, a celebration of fertility, which turned into Easter and new life and everything like that. How could you not celebrate that with a chocolate egg? So I was doing some research into eggs, as you do. And they're actually really weird. And the more I've researched...
I think a lot of people think eggs are weird.
Because it's just a chicken or hen, period.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, I'm really upset because eggs are my kind of go-to because they're healthy, I can actually make them easily. you know, they're good protein.
Just eat eggs, and whenever you get an egg out, you just get a boiled egg out and you're just snacking on it. And I'm literally like, and it makes me feel really unwell.
We were in the Cotswolds recently and
you wanted to open your egg in the car.
So we had to get a meal deal from Tesco and I was really hungry. So I just thought, I don't want to eat anything like too high sugar, high carb, because my body just does not run well on that kind of thing. I very much need like protein and stuff. So I was like, I'm going to get these, which is so stupid. It's literally two eggs in a plastic box. It's so stupid.
Each their own. I think that's the thing. You got to do what's right for your body. For me, I just find eggs really strange. My neurodivergence shows up in strange ways, and sometimes I'm a bit funny about certain like foods or when I'm eating them. But yeah, the idea of eggs, I can eat them sometimes, but other times it makes me feel weird.
I've just honestly researched eggs so much this week.
Yeah, come on then. What's okay, the egg research?
No, I'm not joking. We could do a whole series on eggs. They are witchy as fuck. I went into a deep, deep, deep egg hole. I'm going to try and condense it. Lol. Wait, eggs aren't condensed, it's milk, right?
Oh my God.
So the reason we have eggs at Easter is due to their relation to rebirth and birth, but they were also banned from being consumed during Lent. So that's why at the end of Lent, everyone be craving eggs and they get to feast on them. So the church would bless the first eggs appearing on the table on Easter Sunday. I did actually find the egg blessing. I feel like after I've requested Tatum do so many sonnets across this podcast, do you want to do the egg blessing, or do you want me to do it?
Okay, so where's the egg blessing from?
So this
from?
Is it's I got this from a journal which I'll link, and it is actually the form that they used for blessing Easter eggs on the Easter table back in the day.
Oh, nice. Okay. Yeah, I'll read your sonnet.
I didn't write it, but
I'll read God's sonnet.
I'm just literally picturing like God with an egg.
God with an egg. Oh Lord, we pray thee that benefits of thy... What? Oh Lord, we pray thee that the benefit of thy blessing may descend upon these eggs, which thou hast created, so that they become...
Sorry. I'm sorry, but how are they saying that God created the eggs? Literally like came out of a chicken.
Yeah.
Anyway, whatever.
Maybe God created the chicken. God created everything, but who is God? That is the question. God is a woman. Anyway, so that they become a salutary food for thy faithful ones who partake of them whilst giving thanks to the resurrection of our Lord.
I feel like now I'm going to have to read a monologue to my eggs before I eat them. But actually, I think I'm never going to eat eggs ever again.
Well, you know, a great way to celebrate Ostara is by doing an egg spell, which we've done before. We did an Ostara event, 2 years ago now? And I do this every year. Even if it's just on my own. Sometimes we do it with our coven. Sometimes we do it in our community. But it's a really gorgeous, easy way to celebrate Ostara. It's great to work with the elements. So I'd recommend having a little sprinkle of earth, whether you're going to do this outside, which then, of course, you can just use what's in front of you. Or if you're going to do this at home, you can bring a little bit of earth into your home. I'd recommend some incense to represent air. You could have a candle or even a fire and have a bit of water as well. So with this, you want to get an egg and you want to crack it open, take the top of it off and pour the contents out. With this egg, this is about you really putting your wishes and desires and the things that you want to grow. So you want to decorate the egg. You can either put a pentagram on it to represent, of course, as above, so below, all of the elements. Or you can, whether it's a job that you're trying to bring into your life or anything that you are wanting to grow, you can do symbols, drawings, even words, and you can put that on your shell. Now fill the shell with soil. And then grab your seeds. So you can get seeds from the local shop or from the...
Home base.
Home base, garden center. And you want to take about 3 of these small seeds and then you want to put them in the soil and just gently push them in just below the soil. And closing your eyes, you want to visualize really see yourself doing the thing that you want to bring into your life. And language here is really important. So instead of saying, I want, whatever it is, you say, I have. You feel it in your body and you see it. If it's you in a new home, you visualize yourself in that home. If it's you in a new job, you visualize yourself doing that job. If it's money that you're really needing, you see yourself surrounded by money. Then you tip in a little bit of the water to let the seed settle. And now we go on to the elemental blessing. So, with your egg, you then take a little bit more soil and sprinkle it into the egg and say, by earth, I cleanse you. And then with the incense, you circle the egg over it and say, by air, I cleanse you. And then quickly over the flame or the fire, you say, by fire, I cleanse you. And then you sprinkle a little bit more water. By water, I cleanse you. Then holding your egg, you say, you are blessed by the earth. You are blessed by the elements. And then with this egg, you can keep it on your windowsill and really take care of it, whether it's daily or every other day. Go to your egg, spend some time with it, envision it growing, and you can repeat these same words into the spell and watch it grow.
Yeah, when we did that, it was so nice to see everyone sending us photos like a few months later.
Yeah, to see their little spells sprouting.
It was sprouting, the spells were sprouting, and everyone loved that. That was a really nice day. We'll definitely have to do that one.
Yeah, because you don't need much to do that, you know. You need an egg and some pens, and then you work with what you've got as well for the elements. And with this stuff, the most important thing is you carving out this time and doing it with intention, and your visualizations are really, really powerful. It's low maintenance and very effective.
But yeah, what else could you do by yourself?
It is a good time to plant seeds. Yeah. And if you have the space, you could start a magical herb garden.
It's the perfect time.
And if you don't have space, go down to your community garden. I really miss my time at the community garden because I used to live right next to one and I'd spend so much time there. If you find, often there are local ones, so I'd really recommend that if you don't have your own space to do so.
Yeah, nice. I actually have the seeds that Annick gave me. I think they were tansy seeds. It was in that flock. Yeah. So I will, I'm going to start that because I actually have got my own kind of little front garden now. So I will do that.
And this is the thing, as we said before, January, following the Gregorian calendar, there's this pressure of January being about goal setting. But it's still the winter, and that's why then we have Imbolc, which is warming up a bit. And now we're going into Astara in the spring equinox. And this is a really good time to think about the goals that you were thinking about towards the end of last year and the beginning of this year that maybe you haven't quite put into practice. Or maybe you haven't even thought about goals for the year ahead, which is totally fine. But if there are things that you're wanting for the year ahead, this is the perfect time to do so because spring is about prioritizing what you want and visualizing and bringing those things into your life.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely feel a lot, like I said earlier, a lot more motivation when the sun comes out, more warmth. You feel like you want to do more things. You don't just want to hibernate, which is our natural instinct in the winter. You can also honor Freya, the Norse goddess, and Osiris, the Egyptian goddess, because they're both spring deities to honour, and Persephone.
And the Pan god.
Okay, can I talk about horror films? Just a little bit again.
Is this just a segment that we're doing now?
I have now made this a segment. I'm so sorry, but you won't let me do a horror podcast with you.
So you've got to have your moment.
I've got to have my moment. It takes 30 seconds and it makes me so happy.
All right, let's go.
Okay, hear me out, like Donnie Darko.
Great film. Actually need to rewatch. Haven't watched it in ages.
There's a bunny in that. Frank.
Perfect.
It's so good.
How else would you celebrate Easter?
Donnie Darko and a bag of mini eggs.
Perfect.
Bunny Man Massacre. Silence of the Lambs.
You know I love Silence of the Lambs because Chianti. That's right, isn't it? Hannibal Lecter is like, I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
Chianti.
No, he does this. I did try and eat liver because with my disability, the doctor said that I need CoQ10.
No, sorry, I wasn't laughing at that. Sorry. I was just thinking the doctor said I needed to leave the beans, a glass of Chianti and his fucking liver.
No, they said that I have to eat like animal liver to get CoQ10, like high levels of CoQ10. So my ex made me some liver and I tried to make it nice by putting it in breadcrumbs, I think it was. Oh, I didn't like it. Yeah, it was not nice.
That's honestly, that's making me feel so sick.
Yeah, it was really horrible.
But I actually don't mind a pate, to be honest.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, so let's watch some bunny films. Silence of the Lambs, Donnie Darko.
Bunny Massacre.
What's Bunny Massacre? I haven't heard that one.
Honestly, just the low... You know I love a low-rated IMDb horror film that's just utter shit. You don't feel bad for the characters. You don't feel bad that anyone's getting like slashed up. It's just, it's so easy to watch.
We have such different brains because I can't watch something if I don't care about the characters.
Remember, I was in a horror film last year.
Oh yeah, how good.
Now if you Google me, like my IMDb, like, I look like I'm really like high up in this horror film, my IMDb, yeah.
Very good. March is, of course, a bridge month and it carries us from a very different place. So we go from Pisces season, which is the moon, into Aries season, which is the emperor. Pisces season is all about things coming to the surface, the very emotional stuff, you know, and being able to let go of what needs to be shed. It's not the easiest time because a lot of stuff is still coming out as a bit of a purge, really. And then we go into Aries season and we are in spring and it's a bit more fun.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a Pisces, so I think I'm fun, but we can be quite deep. Excuse me. We can be quite, I guess, deep and serious, but we have our moments, but it is more of this, emotional time.
Absolutely.
And Pisces season is very much what needs healing, what needs attention, what needs that repairing. And then this Aries season and spring, it's like leave all that stuff behind that doesn't serve us and honor the emperor and the fire within. The equinox is this crossing over of the bridge and we've stepped into the sun, stepped into rebirth energy.
However you celebrate, I think it is important to connect to nature, experience the world in which our ancestors experienced. Just going from season to season, it's like, oh, wow, that was just winter. Now I'm in here. And I think I get really overwhelmed. But I'm really excited for spring, more excited than I've ever been. And I don't know why that is. Maybe it's because I've moved house. I'm living by myself. I'm in a new area. And I just feel really excited and happy and motivated.
And this is a great time to personally step into that energy. But also, look at who's around you. Where are you putting your energy? And this is a great time personally to see where your energy is flowing and where maybe it's a bit stunted and whether you are going to actively try and get that energy to be more of a reciprocal flow or whether you leave it behind. And so it's looking after yourself, acknowledging what you need, stepping into that power, but also looking after each other. It's a time to reach out to your community, show up for your friends, and plant these seeds, you know, whether that's a political seed. It's really important that we are showing up for each other. And winter, it can be a time where we do have to hibernate and shut ourselves away. And a lot of us don't do that and we are still, you know, showing up in lots of ways as we should. But there's this transition where there's a bit more energy. So as much as that energy is for yourself and really important and to put that into your projects or your work or whatever you're wanting to bring into your life, it's also important to use that energy to show up for others as well. And of course, at this time, the weather is still a bit unpredictable. There are cold days that continue, but the air brings promise. So keep your heart and eyes open to all the signs of spring.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoy our podcast, please subscribe or follow on whichever platform you listen to your podcasts on.
If you want to support us, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts and you can follow us on Instagram at @honeyinthehex.
If you have any of your own folklore stories, we would love it if you would share them with us. Until next time, Coven.